good morning. That's a song that could be the theme of our life, not just the Mexico mission team, right? Wonderful. This morning, it's all about Mexico, and you can see that we're going to have the opportunity to hear from our Mexico mission team. So the Mexico team comes to the platform, and Raymond comes down to join me. Give them all a warm welcome. Will you do that? So, Raymond, you've been doing these Mexico trips for quite a while. You did them before you came to Wood Village.
Yes.
August is an anniversary for you and Lisa.
Yes.
14 years, right?
Yes.
You know, you're breaking the patterns of youth pastors that used to hang around for a couple of years.
Yes, I know that too.
Yeah. So, at Wood Village, with our team, how many of these trips have you made?
This was our seventh trip.
Seven?
Yes.
And always to the same area with the same group?
Always to the same area. Tijuana, Tecate, Rosarita, those three areas are kind of like Gresham, Wood Village, Fairview.
Yeah. With the more ministries.
With the more ministries.
So you must feel pretty secure working with them, and it's a good relationship.
It's very good. They take, if I have any needs, any hiccups, which we always do, they're right on board to help work them out.
So you seem to just be calm and collected all through the process. I'm the guy that worries. One of us has to do that.
Yeah.
So from the time that you left at about 4:30 on Saturday morning and we saw you drive away till you came back the following Saturday night at a little after 6, I don't think I worry to the point of sin.
We'll have to have a theological discussion on that.
We could. But I'm always concerned. There are certain things that really surface in my mind that I pray extra about. So I'm curious to know, what are some of those areas that you see as the biggest challenge, the biggest concern, that if you were a worrier, that might fall into that category?
The thing we emphasize to the students the most is the border crossings, going in and getting out of Mexico. And just to make sure that, you know, if you're going to disobey it anywhere on this trip, these are not the times to do that. just be quiet, only talk if you're spoken to. In fact, I think we said don't talk, and one of the kids was asked a direct question and didn't know what to do. He's like, I'm not supposed to talk. But so the border crossings, I think one of the things, if I were to worry, would be about if there was an injury that required more than what our RN or RNs could take care of, the process of getting them back to medical treatment. Never had that happen. Praise be to God.
And then there's always a concern about finances that I don't think you worry about at all, but that I do. How'd we do this year?
We did great. Tim's going to share a little bit about that during our presentation, but you guys were rock stars. Thanks.
One last question, because you've got a lot to share. What's maybe the high point of these trips as you look over them? The thing that just jumps out is, this is why I want to do it again.
It'll be the last slide on the presentation is okay. The highlight. Yep.
You're well planned. I'm going to pray and send you up there.
All right.
Father, thank you for what we're about to hear. It's so great to see young people letting you take their life and mold it, and that we have a tremendous group of adults who come alongside of them and try to team up with the parents to add a dimension of discipleship, development, mentoring, coaching, all that's involved. We're just grateful that we have a church family who supports these kinds of ministries. It makes my heart thrilled to know that a lot of people of Spanish-speaking culture have come into our community, and we're having a tremendous ministry to them. And then we're able to go to Mexico and minister to the people there and leave something that they really need. In this case, a house, but more than that, friendship and love and care and the story of Jesus. So we just commit this time to you. We thank you for it. We pray for our church family. We know that there's a lot of trauma going on. There's been a lot of heartache again this week. People have lost loved ones, some that were just in the process of completing their life cycle, and one young man who was so young and it's so untimely. We just pray for comfort and courage and peace, and that we'll all be reminded that you're aware of what's going on, you make no mistakes, and you do all things well. Now we commit this next time to you, and thank you for the privilege of being a part of it. We know that you'll be honored. In Jesus' name, amen.
Well, first of all, I just want to thank you for allowing us to take an entire Sunday morning and just share our experience. It is one of the highlights of our ministry. And I think I would just like to start off, one of the questions I was asked was about finances. And Tim Collins just would like to share a little bit. He shared at our parent meeting a little bit about how the financial process works. And so why don't you bookend it for us?
I'd love to. So first of all, a big thank you. We couldn't have gone to Mexico without the support of you guys and the generosity of Wood Village Baptist. It was absolutely incredible. We went down fully funded. And with that, it's not only the partnership of you guys, but each of the students had the opportunity to send letters out to various individuals and then pray that God would provide the resources necessary to fully fund the trip. And for us, it was a blessing to know that we were going down fully funded, that we weren't going to have to wait for money to, you know, get us back over the border going to and from. But one of the cool things that happened on the way down in Kettleman City, that was our first stop. We stayed there at a Best Western our first night before heading down into Mexico itself. We woke up that morning. We were in that little breakfast area. Kids were eating, you know, instant oatmeal or other sorts of things. We had a couple of muffins from the day before set out on the table. And as we were cleaning up the area, a woman came up to me and said, "Hey, I took one of your muffins." I was like, "Hey, we've got plenty. It's not that big a deal." She goes, "No, you know, I was watching you guys and I was talking to some of the kids. You're doing something, aren't you?" I said, "Well, yes, we're actually in the process of heading down to Mexico to build a home for a family that doesn't have a home." And she's like, "You know, I wanted to give to you guys as well to support you in the mission that you're doing." So she handed over some money that I handed over to Raymond. So it wasn't just necessarily us that was a part of the trip, but God was blessing us even on the road down to Mexico, bringing in some resources. And we actually put that towards a food bank. One of the needs down in Mexico is not only housing, but also food as well. And so not only did we raise money to build the house, but we put that towards a food bank. And I think our kids, if I understood correctly, Raymond, was it between around $250? As far as the food bank goes?
It was, not counting all the change, there was over $250 in there.
We asked our kids, just with some of their spare change or money that they had brought to buy souvenirs and those sorts of things, if they'd be willing to put some of that aside and sacrifice, as it were, and maybe not buy a poncho or maybe not get that latte at Starbucks on the way down. But our kids gave over $250 of their own money towards a food bank down there in Mexico, which was really, really cool as well. So they were able to bless out of what God had blessed them with. So from start to finish, from when we began the process back in March to now, it's neat to see the way that God continued to not only provide, but provide above and beyond. So a big thank you to you and a big thank you to God for seeing that thing through from start to finish.
All right, thanks. So I may be having some technical difficulty. We'll see if we can figure out how to run through. We have 106 photos. That's just a fraction of the photos that were taken by a variety of people. But it kind of gives us a start to finish from the trip. So this picture, everyone's bright-eyed and pushy-tailed. That's about 4:15 a.m. Saturday morning. That looks like our group of students that had a little photo op. And Terry's going to probably have to recycle these. I checked this all out yesterday, and it was working great. But that's technology for us. Every trip starts off with prayer. So whoever was here, we gather up parents, students, team, everybody. We make a circle out in the middle of the parking lot. And our chairman of the elders, Craig Crandall, prayed for us. And then into the vans we go. And this is what the trip, how the trip looks like at the onset. As soon as we get in the vans, kids are back asleep. However, if we back up, there is a lot of this as well. No, back, there you go. There it is. Yeah. We think the clicker's working now. And it's not. Our first break is at a rest stop. We pull out all the breakfast stuff that we had prepared, and the kids get a chance to stretch their legs, as well as the leaders, and an opportunity for our drivers. Just so you know, we had four vehicles, two transporting the students and two transporting our gear. There's two drivers in each vehicle, and so we have an opportunity to trade out at each stop. And our goal on day one is to get to In-N-Out Burger. We've always achieved this goal, so we're happy about that. But we actually, they built an In-N-Out in Kettleman City, which is where we stay our first night. That was new 2 years ago. 4 years ago, it wasn't there, so we find an In-N-Out on the way. We discovered on our trip down 2 years ago that they had built an In-N-Out right across the street from the hotel, and we're like, yeah. So we push through. And we get checked in and go have dinner, and kids can relax a little bit in the pool. And then we're back the next morning. We're back in the vans, and that's what it looks like. And then this rest stop is about 40 minutes from San Diego, and this rest area is like no other. If you guys are ever traveling down to Southern Cal via car or whatever, about 45 minutes from San Diego, there's a rest stop that looks more like a resort. It's amazing. It's right on the beach, so we always stop for a photo op at a rest stop, of all places. From there, then we get into San Diego, which is where More Ministries is based. They actually sold their building that they had all their offices in. They realized that they could do a bulk of their work from home and save the money on the building. They were feeling like they were landlords more than anything else because they rented out a big portion of the building. So they sold it, and now we meet at Starbucks, which no one complains about. But as we were there checking in and going through that process, there was a lot of Amore staff there, which we didn't. I don't have a picture of them, but I'm sure we have some somewhere. But our kids were showing off their various talents, backflips, juggling, kendama, which I don't think I got a kendama picture in there. But the Amore staff was just amazed at how talented our kids were. And he's actually juggling. That's what you're up to five. Where is he? You can juggle five, right? Do you have him with you?
No.
We'll have to. Maybe if we'll get that going on second hour. Okay. So between those two pictures, between the picture of Amore and this, we have crossed the Mexican border. Every year the rules change. You talk about some of the stresses. About 8 or 10 days before the trip, we found out that we can't take a box truck across the border, which is how we get all our gear. So we start, I worried for about 10 minutes, and I'm like, you know what? God knows what we need, and God provided it. But crossing the border is one of our big, just the whole idea of going into Mexico. We've heard in the past all those stories about the violence and everything that goes on in Mexico. Reggie shared at our parent meeting about the safety. This is his first trip, but he sent kids across the border several times. So he shared a little bit about safety, and he wants to talk a little bit more about that post-trip.
Like I said, this is my and Katie's first trip. It was Kaylin's third trip, though. So kids have been doing this trip for a lot of years. So it's like, okay, I feel safe. I feel my kids are safe. When Carissa, our oldest, did her trip and was coming back, the van breaks down, and they're pushing the van across the border. And so there's a perfect opportunity to worry. We didn't. We know that they were children of God. They were in God's hand. So safety is one thing that people always ask, do you feel safe? Never felt fear at all the entire trip, okay? The communities are like our communities. We were outside working in the street. Occasionally we had to move our stuff out of the street so that people can drive down there. But like I said, never felt the fear factor. It just felt like we were in a poor neighborhood here in Oregon. We did have a little bit of apprehension going across the border this time because they go there. We even asked the Moore ministry person who takes us across the border, what's it going to be like? Depends upon who's there, what mood they're in, those type of things. But anyways, the vans got pulled over to the side, and we waited for about 15 minutes for someone to come and check us out. And the only person that came over about 7-8 minutes into it told us to move forward a little bit. So now we're sitting there going, what do we do? Do we just go ahead and start driving? Eventually, the Moore ministry representative said, go ahead and start driving. You come around the corner, and here are two big military vehicles armed guards, 50 calibers up on the roof, and we just drove off without permission. So there's that little looking in the rearview mirrors. We're going by them going, are they going to chase us down? So like I said, that was kind of fun. You could say, we blew the border. But anyways, like I said, the fear factor, that was something that people always ask. We were just in a poor neighborhood here in Oregon. That's what it felt like to me.
Yeah, the border crossing is really interesting. When we're coming back into the States, you just get in line and you wait in line and you inch forward and you inch forward and you get up and you talk to the guy and he asks you questions and you go through. You never know what you're going to get when you're crossing into Mexico. And again, the laws change every couple of years. The two cargo vans were told, you guys need to get scanned. They got these scanners and they'll scan the whole vehicle. So you need to go off over here. They separate us from the passenger vans. And we followed another guy that was going down with the Moor because they sent him over there. And then they told that guy, well, you need to come over here. Lisa follows him, so I follow Lisa. Now we're cutting in front of like 5 or 6 lanes of traffic trying to cross the border. And then, you know, we're getting honked at and all this kind of stuff. But then they're just like, then the guards at the gates just said, get through, get through, get through. So we ended up blowing the border too. We didn't get scanned, didn't get anything, just straight through. But we still got through before the passenger vehicles. So we're sitting out there in front of another armed guard with a 50 caliber thing on us. And they told us, you know, if you sit there too long, they're going to come up and ask you to move. You know, so that was, where would we go? You know, we wouldn't know where to go, you know, type of thing. But it all works out. Everyone gets through, and then they lead us off into camp. So here we are at camp, and we're setting up camp. And there's, and then once camp's set up, then we have dinner, and then we finish off every night around the campfire. And we have some students who are going to kind of share about our campfire experience, starting off with Miguelito.
Hello. So every night, we just sit around the campfire, you know, after a shower, after dinner, and we chat a little until Jeremy gives us the signal to shut up. So he talks a little about the Bible, and then he splits us off and to go meet someone, and he always gives us the two same questions every night. What's a good thing? What's something good that happened? What's something bad? Something difficult? But the third question is always the most important. And on the first night of devotion, he asked, where is God at your center? That God is always on our center. He should always be our center of thinking, our center of heart. And that's what I told my partner, and he agreed.
Yeah, so Jeremy Clement's been on several trips as a student. We needed another driver. And so I said, hey, Jeremy. And he said, I would love to do it. And so this was his first year as a leader, and he's going to share a little bit about that. But one of the things, knowing that he just graduated from Multnomah University, my alma mater, I was like, I would like you to lead devotionals. And he did a fantastic job. And so you hear from a few other students. So after campfire night one, we get some sleep, and then we're back. Then we go see our job site for the first time. There's been times in the past where we're able to visit the job site Sunday night after we set up camp. It's only happened once or twice. And so we get there. First order of business, if you go back one slide, Terry, first order of business crew is to do what?
Meet the family.
So we meet the family. This is the head of the household. There are some pictures with the rest of the family, but we don't have one right here. There's this gentleman and his wife, and their 3 grandkids are the ones that we were building for. And a friend of his would show up from time to time. There may be even a picture or two of him helping us do some of the work. So we meet the family, and then you might recognize when we came up for prayerful send-off a few weeks ago, we had a picture of the family. It was black and white, but they were standing right in front of that wall that is partially painted white with the address written on it, and they were standing right there next to that wall. When you open the gates, this is their little piece of land. Up above is basically their neighbors that live up on top of them and behind, I mean not directly on top of them, but behind them and up above them. And then we move inside the gate, or that's actually a 180. So you turn 180 from their gate, and that's across the street looking out. There's a valley that goes down and then back up another hill. So they're kind of in the valley. There's a hill behind them and a hill in front of them. And this is inside the gate. The black little opening you see there is actually their front door of the house that they've been living in until we left. And so off to the left and is the brown plywood, and off to the right is some white plywood. But that's their dwelling. And this is just a snapshot from the front door looking inside. And Katie was sharing, I did see some people sitting. That's a car seat in there as their couch, but it's also the younger boy's bed. Right? Dirt floor is what they have. So after we meet the family and get the lay of the land, this is kind of what we're looking at. That you see our people there in the forefront, and then behind them is a pad of dirt that he has cleared off and leveled to the best of his ability. And from what we could tell, he was chipping away at the surrounding hillside to dig away enough land for us to build the house. And then a slightly different angle again. So we did have, the house we built was a double. A single house is 22 feet by 11 feet. We built a 22 by 22 foot house. And we had about a 26 or 27 foot square pad to work on. So we had a little bit of room on either side, but you can see where he cinder blocked to create the level where he could build the dirt up to give us a level floor. And he did a really good job. We had to raise up that back corner, as you're looking upper left, we had to raise that up about 3 or 4 inches to get level in that corner. And that's just us checking to make sure that we've got a square form, and then we start pouring, we start mixing. And as we shared before, and you can roll that, actually, one thing we do before we start, once we have the form in, we actually dig a trench all the way around the inside of the form, and that actually anchors that floor to the ground so that the pad can't just slide off his ground. The whole house would just slip in the rain and the wind, apparently. So you dig a trench about 8 inches deep, and that just locks the whole floor in. And this is the kids. It was hard ground, and so shovels in a lot of areas weren't enough, so we grabbed the pickaxes. And you can just scroll through those, Terry. There's about 6 pictures of the hard work that we start off with to break that ground up next to the form. And then we shovel that out, and we just shovel that to the outside of the form. That helps hold in all the concrete as we start pouring. And so there's some shovels digging that out. That's one of our kids, right? That's you? Mm-hmm. All right. So day one, I heard a comment about the level of work. Who made a comment about the work, whether it was harder or easier than you thought? No one wants to? Somebody was, you have a comment?
Yeah. So it can vary based on just like how well you work together and how much space you have, because your biggest asset is people, but your biggest hindrance is also people. And on the back wall where it just goes straight up, you have about 2 feet from the edge of the form of the cement to the wall. So as you're trying to move around to dump your cement trays, you have about 6 tubs for mixing in this 22 by 22 foot square. And then you also have all the people bringing bucket brigades of rocks, cement, water, all the fiber. So you have about 20 people in this area with hose, just mixing, and people running through. So it's very crowded, and it can get very difficult at times when you have to rotate who needs to dump and then trying to move all 6 trays in a little circle around each other trying to get everybody there.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure on day one I heard a couple of students say, and mind you, when we start off with workshops and we teach the kids how we're going to build a house, how to cut the boards, how to use a tape measure, how to hammer the nails, the boards together, all this kind of stuff. And we tell them on day one, it's all about getting the floor in. We have to get the floor done so that it can set up enough overnight so that we can stand on it the next day and put the house on it. And it's hard work. I mean, it's really hard, dirty work. And day one, I heard a couple of the guys talking, and they shared with me, this is a lot harder than I expected. And it is. It's really hard. They work hard. Lots of fluids going in And it was probably mid-70s, but the sun was out. As soon as we got on job site, the sun's out all day. So this is just, hey, the floor's ready to pour. We're happy. Woo! Until you start mixing, and then the smile goes away, and just the sweaty brow shows up, and you're working. So as you can scroll through some of these pictures for me, Terry, as I was putting together, did any of you get to catch some of the time-lapse video before service started? We set up a couple of cameras, and we run time-lapse. If you missed that, Terry's going to turn that on right at the end of service. It's about 14 minutes long, and you can sit and visit and watch as the house goes up from beginning to end. You can hold right there. But as I was putting that together, I was getting some technical assistance from Jerry Fast, our tech guy, and he was watching some of that video of the floor getting done, because there's 25 people in this little. In fact, there's usually about 25 people in half of that space, because you do half at a time. And he's like, wow, look at all of those people. How do you not just run into each other? And I shared with him what Kaylin was saying, that, and this is one of the things that we learn at our workshops. People are your biggest asset. We can't get this job done without the other people, but yet they're going to be your biggest hindrance as well, because there's going to be people in your way all the time. But they're a bigger asset than they are a hindrance, that's for sure. So that was our floor. 22 foot by 22 foot concrete pad, and again, no premix, no cement mixers. It's bags of pure cement, a big pile of sand and gravel, some black bins, some shovels, buckets of water that we have to go dip out of bigger buckets of water, and lots of physical labor to get it mixed, get it dumped, and get it smoothed out. And I didn't have any good pictures in there of the process of getting it smoothed out, but you'll see that on the time lapse video if you stick around and watch. And so day one, we were 10 minutes. By the way, one of the obstacles this year is they said we're gonna take you in a little bit later than you're used to going in, I think, and we're gonna ask you to leave sooner than you usually leave. So really, on day one, we had less than 8 hours on the job site, where we usually account for about 10 hours. And so we had all 25 people working on the floor. We didn't have anybody framing, so that set us back on day one as far as what our goals are. What we like to have done on day one is the floor done and at least 4 to 6 walls ready to go up, so when we come in on day two, we can start setting up the walls. We weren't able to do that, but no problem. We rolled with it. And then we go back, we have our dinner, and we're back to Fireside and night two.
Yeah, so we're back at Firesides, and we're just talking again, and like we're doing the whole thing. There's something good about the day, something bad, and I could definitely hear a lot of complaining about sore arms that day. But then that day was really talking a lot about, like, what do you trust God to like provide for your needs with? Like, do you truly like trust God that He's going to provide for all your needs? And like, and there was a lot of like talk about it, and we had a really long discussion time. It was really cool. But like, just the Mexico trip in general, like there were so many instances where we could just really like think about it, and like God would give us an like exact example of it. Like with the box truck, like we needed a way to get our materials down there, but we had no way of doing it. And like Raymond was saying earlier, instead of worrying about it, instead of getting all caught up in ourselves, like just relying on God, knowing that like He would provide a way for that. Or like when we're at the border, like when we're standing there and we're waiting, like knowing that God will take care of us and that like all of our needs are going to be met. Like those are all things that like Jeremy was just really trying to push on to us to realize that like that's something we need to carry on in like all of our lives, not just while we're down in Mexico, that no matter where we are, like God's going to carry on and like take care of our needs, and it's up to us to trust Him to do that.
Excellent. Lisa, at our parent meeting, you were talking about what it's like at camp and how we organize and structure camp life. And this is the end of day two. How was camp running? And if you could kind of give them a little look at what camp life is like.
Camp life starts the minute that we pull in. We just have a big slab of dirt and some porta potties off to the side. And we... the kids just have to work hard. There's no acclimating to the weather. There's no checking out the scenery and seeing what's there. It's unloading, setting up the kitchen, which is huge. A lot of work is really, really heavy, and it's a lot of carrying heavy tubs and coolers and putting up heavy equipment. And And then every night after working for a good solid 8 hours and working really hard, we're all back to working more. And it's just doing chores until it's time to go to bed, getting firewood, getting water, cooking dinner, doing dishes. There's no, you worked hard all day, let us get some food for you. We're all working hard. And so it's from the minute you wake up in the morning till you go to bed at night, the students and the leaders are just working, and a lot of it's really physical work. I would just say on this trip, I think partially because it felt like an unfortunate circumstance that we had to leave the job site at 4:30 every day because we weren't getting as much done at the job site. But I think it made the benefit of that is we had a much more enjoyable evening at camp. We were actually able to get some showers. Little football was played, a little, was it football, soccer? I don't know. So anyway, they had a little recreation, and it just didn't seem like we were driving so hard at camp. The leaders that were there this trip were fantastic in just doing whatever had to be done. The students worked so hard and got everything done in a timely manner. It was just very stress-free and enjoyable, and I'm very much the opposite of my husband. If there's anything you could possibly worry about, I'll worry about it and want to make sure it's planned and done and taken care of. So but this, it was very enjoyable. Everything got done in camp, and everyone did their part.
Yeah, there's a lot of work that goes on at camp, like she was saying, as well as on the job site with dishes and dinner prep and cleanup and lunch prep and breakfast. I mean, there's almost always something going on until just those last couple of hours after fireside. But boy, I got to tell you, this year, it was like, Jeremy, you're staying up till lights out, right? He's like, yeah. I'm like, I'm going to bed. It just, man, this, it was, I was just ready for some sleep. It was a lot of hard but rewarding work. So day three, we're driving in. We're trying to get a good picture. This is actually the street before we hit the street that we're working on. And you see how that van is tilting to the left? Double or triple that, and that's about how much it was leaning on this next street, because off to your left is just a hill that goes down, and they've just got these steep hills. And they stopped the caravan. The first day in, there was five other groups building on the same street, and we're all in one long caravan. And we're the very first house, and so they stop us kind of right in front of our house as the rest of the caravan goes by. And our van full of kids is just leaning, like, and I'm like, Jeremy, that, tell me that's not going to fall over. I mean, it was crazy. So we're trying to get a good picture. Didn't quite do it justice, but hey, that's life. So then day three, it's or day two, sorry, we got to start building some walls. And so we had four framing crews going, three out in the street in front of the house, and one we had enough space off to the side of the floor to be framing in there. And so you got a few pictures of, again, no power tools. In fact, day one, I set up two cameras to do time-lapse video, and so I had this 100-foot extension cord so I can get the cameras in opposite corners. And the Amor Ministry guy spots this electric cord there, and he's like, what's that? I'm like, that's an extension cord. He goes, what's it for? I'm like, it's for my camera. He's like, oh, okay. Because there's no power tools allowed. No battery-operated tools, no corded drills, nothing. It's all done with hand tools, saws, hammers, all that kind of stuff. So, and so the frames just start going up. And we've got a little manual that we've gone through before. The kids did, they built half-scale walls during our workshops. The leaders are all freshening up on their building stuff, supposedly on the trip down with their books. But we do a lot of reading of the book when we're framing the walls. I think next time we're going to have some required reading before we go and some and different things, but just to save us a little extra time on the job site. But you can scroll through there for me. Oh, here we go. It can get rough. It can get rough. There's sometimes there's a little blood. Sometimes there's some scuffed fingers, toes, whatever, knees. And sometimes you just need a little extra break.
Okay, so just so we're clear about this.
No. There's nothing to be clear about. The picture's worth a thousand words. And if you watch, now let me just say, if you watch the time-lapse video, you will see this, okay? In order for a time-lapse to catch somebody laying on the ground, they got to be there at least 10 minutes, okay? Because that thing is not snapping very many pictures. So if you see somebody, they've been there for a while, okay? So you watch the video, you'll see that. We can go on. And then once we have a few walls, we start putting them together. And again, the job isn't without its hiccups. Last year when Jake Crandall in the house still? He's over in Children's Ministry. Last year, Jake Crandall, or 2 years ago, I should say, he was the foreman. He was one of my students that again, was kind of interning, or I just asked him to kind of step in as a foreman on the job. And as you put the house together, they fit together in a certain way. Well, when two walls come together like this, you probably can't see my fingers, but he had them together like this instead of like this. And so now we're going to be 3 inches or 7 inches short by the time we get to the... So we had to tear it all apart and redo it. And we're like, let's not do that again this year. This year, Raymond was in charge, and we did it again this year. And so we had to tear apart three corners and readjust them and put them all back together. But hey, it got done. And as we're putting those together, the framing crews are out there building and bringing them in, and we keep adding them to the house, and the house just keeps growing. And just a few shots of kids getting up on the roof and kids putting together the walls. And talk about fun. It's just fun to see this happening when you're standing there. And then so at the end of day two, we had the structure built. We actually had a little bit of baling wire put on, but we had the structure built, the roof up there, although the roof was not attached, correct? We just had it sitting up there hoping it wouldn't fall off overnight. And then so this is actually the end of day two, but it's our third fireside evening.
So we also did the same two questions we did every night for devotionals, which was what was positive in that day, what was negative in that day. And it was hard to have a negative because we had the framework of the house up and it felt like it's now a house. So we did those two questions, and then we had our third question, which was, when do you not trust God and sin as a result? And, after going through that question with my partner, it's pretty easy to see that there's a lot of situations where it's hard to trust God, and it's easy to turn to sin. And afterwards, it's also easy to see that sin can't ever replace what God can provide for you. And so I think after, especially this trip, seeing what that family had as a home, and we go down and build a house for them, and showing them God's love, it really shows us what our needs are and what our wants are and how much more our needs are important in our lives.
Excellent. I'm just going to take a quick break from the photos and ask anyone on the team up to this point now, you've traveled down for 2 days, we've set up camp, we've poured a floor, we've got the frame up. Who amongst my students and leaders would just like to share a little insight about what's been going on so far on the trip?
You already said.
Okay.
Oh, we got Sarah.
Is it on? So for me, I'm a mom of four. I have been watching this trip happen since my kids were little. Couldn't wait. My two oldest made it to Mexico. It didn't work out for me, so I got to make it with my two younger ones. So it was a huge answer of prayer for me to get to go do that with my kids. And I just loved watching them and their friends, and I was just kind of blown away. I kind of knew what to expect just hearing it from my children. I feel like I'm a hard worker, so I kind of felt like maybe I was prepared for the work. And then getting over there, it's everything's twofold. The work is twofold. The heat is twofold. Everything is just that, a little more extreme. The patience you need, the watching the kids and their friendships develop, it develops so much faster when you're in that kind of a situation. And it's so fun to watch the students. The leaders, I had relationships with all the leaders before this, whether it be work or church, raising kids together. And it was so fun as leaders to just, again, in that kind of a situation, whether it be a stressful or you're just hot and tired, you know, and it's, you know, we're not 15. And so for even just working side by side with the leaders and really just getting to know them even deeper than I had known them before, this whole trip for me was just an amazing experience. And I loved it.
So on the first day, also with the concrete, that was the hardest day for me, because my arms are not very strong, and you're supposed to lift a lot of things. So there were times I was looking around, and I was like, what can I do? I cannot lift this bucket of rocks. But I was able to soon after find a job that was probably even more important for the team and getting the job done, and that really helped us move forward. So finding, everybody has like different strengths, and we all got to figure out what we were best at and use them to the best of our abilities.
And do you associate that with life back here in the United States as you go through daily life?
Yeah. So sometimes, like, when you're working with your friends, like, at school and stuff, maybe on group projects, you also, there's some things that you can't do as well as others, but you have to work on your own strengths to get jobs done.
Yeah, the hand can't say to the foot, I don't need you, right? That may be how it goes.
So when we're down there and it's like a really stressful environment that could be potentially like you just get like angry at other people and stuff. Like again, like the people around us are our biggest asset, but also in our way sometimes. On the first day, it's definitely like the most physical, and like you need to like just be ready to like use your muscles that you have. And like the first part of the day, I was on like mixing the cement, where it's just like, okay, just grinding, like just away. But like the second half after lunch, I was on buckets, and I was like carrying like buckets full of gravel and stuff, and I was starting to get like really tired. And like I didn't know if I could keep going, but then like I realized every time I would pour a bucket into someone else's tray, they'd be like, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. And it was like endless thank yous. And it really like got in my head and like kept me going. It was just like this energy of like showing God's light that like really got to me, and it like helped me to keep going and push through. So it's just like we can use that here in everyday life, and I think it's really awesome.
So this trip was really interesting for me, because I've gone 3 times before as a student, so this was a totally different experience going as a leader. And the thing that kind of jumped out to me is that the 3 times I'd gone before, really, when I think about what my mindset was on those trips, it was almost ironically a selfish mindset, going with this attitude of like, oh, I'm going to go help these people and it's going to be so great. I'm going to have fun with my friends, build a house, do the roof, you know, I'm going to have a blast. And my focus has never been on the family or on the people I'm going with, but really, what am I going to get out of it? And it was just really cool this trip to putting together the lessons and stuff like that to really have a different mindset and be going down, looking at what sort of growth these kids would have and how we could impact the family. And it was just really awesome seeing Miguel and Marvin just working really hard all the time translating for us and doing work on the same time. Like they had two jobs really the entire time, and they did a fantastic job. And you had all our new first-time students who were here just picking up the jobs really, really quickly and doing a fantastic job. And even in Jordan's defense, when he's laying on the ground there in that picture, to be fair, he probably could have found something else to help with, but he was also, you know, not getting stressed out because that was a time when the leaders were all trying to figure out kind of what to do next. And he could have gotten stressed out, but he was just like, okay, I'm just going to sit back and relax. And just seeing how well everybody handled all the different challenges that are thrown out at you was really awesome.
And I will say, Jordan is a very hard worker. So I'm going to move on to day three. We've got the house frame up. The roofing crew is up there making sure the roof's not going to fall off. And we start working on the baling wire. The rest of this process, well, the next process, there's baling wire, there's black paper, and then there's chicken wire. And that whole process is really just about having something for the stucco to hold on to. Typically, if you're going to build a stucco house, you would hammer plywood up to those frames and then chicken wire and stucco. But plywood's expensive, and so baling wire and paper become our plywood. And so we put the baling wire up, and you got the biggest thing, and Lisa and I talk about this all the time, the best way to do it. Because that baling wire has to be tight. If the baling wire is not tight, then when you start pushing on it with stucco, it's moving around too much, and the stucco doesn't want to stay there. As the baling wire is going up, we had Tim and Reggie putting in doors and windows. And when you're done with the baling wire and the paper, then you have what looks to be and is technically an enclosed structure. And you can see here on the one side you have an outside door and two windows. That's along the, and again, these are all 22-foot sides, so they decide where all the doors and windows go. Where I would have put some windows, they decided they didn't want any windows. They wanted them on the other two ends. But there will be a door off to your left down where the ladder is. There's a door there and the ladder's covering it. The doors that I was, because the paper sometimes will cover that up and then you cut out your doorway. But there's the door there. And then this is kind of one of the nice things. Once you've got the paper and the roof on, then whenever you take your Gatorade breaks or your lunch breaks, you get to eat in the shade and get out of that sun. And so we all look forward. In fact, we were like, it's time for break. And I'm like, no, we got to finish the roof and we got to get the paper up so we can have some shade, which was only another 15 minutes or so. And so then we get to relax inside. While we take a little break. Then it's back to work. And so once the black paper's up, then you start putting the chicken wire in. And this is the part that I enjoy the most. I have the most fun because it is amazing to see this chicken wire get attached. We run nails every 6 inches along the top and the bottom of the house. The chicken wire covers down just over halfway. We start at the top, we pull it down, then we go from the bottom up over the top and just hold it right there. But the wire's loose, you know, and it's like this wire has to be nice and tight. And it's just amazing how you go to the corners and you pull it down as far as you can and you stick a nail in there and hammer it in. That holds the chicken wire there. And then you do the other corner, then you pull it down in the middle and then work your way back to the corners. And it is amazing how tight that gets. In fact, Jeremy, you'd never done chicken wire before because you were always on my roofing crew. And I made a point this year that you would not be on my roofing crew. We had a new roofing foreman right here in Kaylin Wardle. She did an excellent job up there. And Jeremy, because when you do the peaks, you're putting the chicken wire up to an angle and then back down, and it is way floppy, just blowing in the wind floppy. And Jeremy is like, I cannot see how this will get tight. And we just come along behind. He's putting it up. I got a crew coming in behind, stretching it down, and it just gets tight. It's pretty. And we're every now and then, there was only about four or five spots on this house that were a little bit loose. And we've got this fancy little barbed wire fence tool that's a spinning hook on a wooden handle. And you just stick that hook in there, and you go, and it just pulls that chicken wire nice and tight, and you're done. All right. And then back, so chicken wires up. So day three was all spent getting the roof on, well, hammered down, getting the weatherproof paper on, getting the shingles, working on all that kind of stuff, as well as getting the baling wire, the paper, and the chicken wire. And we got all that done on day three. And so we're back to our fourth night at the campfire.
So for the fourth night, the third question was, when and how has God blessed me, even in the middle of my rebellion? And by the end of the third day of work, you are exhausted. And so to really get the most out of these questions, you need to put a lot of time and thought into them. But when you're exhausted, it's a lot harder. So trying to push yourself to just go that extra step and really contemplate this question and what it really looks like, because you can just be like, I guess I've been blessed in this way, but that's only half the question. How has he blessed you even in the middle of your rebellion? And so what meant the most for me was, even though I was tired, I was pushing myself to contemplate it further and further and really get the most out of this question. And leading the roof, this was a big blessing, maybe not in the middle of a rebellion, but there were a few hiccups with putting the roof on. And being first time leading it, and just after we got back from the trip, I realized that was a huge blessing because the plywood may not have gone on the roof, meaning we would have had a serious problem because their roof would have holes in it. And God worked it out, and he blessed us. Even though there were a couple hiccups, we were able to work them out and get the house done on time. And so that was just a huge blessing as well to realize.
And one thing I didn't mention, looking at this picture of the fireside, one of the nights that we were at our campfire, a local area pastor that works with Amore, and he's actually the pastor that is working with the family that we built for this year, he came and visited us and shared a little bit about how his ministry looks and works and how he works with the families. And Miguel took the lead, and Marvin assisted in translating so that we could actually understand what he was talking about. So he was sharing, they were translating, and it was a wonderful, wonderful time. And then we got to ask questions of him, and he was so happy and to share with us, and just so grateful for all the teams that Amore works with that come down to build these homes. So that was a really fun. That's the first time we've had a pastor come and visit, and we'll make sure that that's a regular part of our trip. Okay, so the next day.
Just a huge props to you guys again. Coming from someone who doesn't speak Spanish very well, like, they saved us so many times on the work trip, not only when it came to the pastor, but actually at the place as well, asking him questions for more water, for help and things like that, or when locals or like merchants were coming around. Marvin and Miguel were like always on top of it, kind of like Jeremy was saying earlier. Like, they really helped every single one of us on this crew. So it was really cool.
Yeah. Day four is about getting the stucco on, so it's back to the mixing troughs and a little different formula for stucco than concrete, but we start mixing and mixing or stopping for pictures. Then once it's mixed, you throw it on that little wooden hock, and then it goes up onto the wall. And so you got your cement on your hock, you got your trowel with you, and you start moving it from the hock to the wall, and then we just go. And you can just cycle through some of those as you see the stucco getting put up on the wall. And the windows are getting in with the little frames around them that we can stucco up next to the wood. Oh, I don't know if you can tell there, but some of us are so adept at doing the work, we can do it in our sleep. he's not with us this morning. He might be up at camp, but he was just another great kid and a lot of fun to have him on the team. And here we go, the last few little patches. I was like, wait, I got to get the camera. And so they stood there waiting for me to get the camera out so I could get the pictures of the last little areas going on to get the last of the stucco on the house. Just to look at, that's the back of the house, how much room we had next to the concrete wall there, the cinder block wall. And that's the wall there behind us then that I was just looking down. There's about, you know, 2 foot at best section back there. And then the roofing crew is putting the 1x4s on to kind of secure the shingles down to the roof. And then the house is done. So the house is done. We're done right around noon. And the family, as almost always happens, the family wants to provide lunch for us. And I'm a big fan of tamales. I love tamales. Whenever the community does any kind of tamale thing, I'm there. And they brought in tamales. And I was just like, this is awesome. I had like 5 tamales. Two of them, though, were dessert tamales. Has anyone out here ever had a dessert tamale? I had a pineapple tamale and a strawberry tamale, and they were amazing. They were so good. So we get to enjoy a meal. It's a huge blessing to us to know, because they just fed 25 people, and we know from past experience that that's about a week's wages for them to do that. And so we offer to pay for it and all this, and they just won't hear it. They're like, what you've done for us. This family, by the way, they're all amazing. But, I mean, this guy was bringing in cold drinks and coolers, and he had the big 5-gallon things of some juice that was just amazing. And we're like, what is this? I don't know, but it's good. And it's got ice, and it has ice. And so they were great. They were always doing stuff for us. After lunch, we provided them with some housewarming gifts. We've never done this before, but due to the financial blessing of the church and the great fundraising of the kids, we had some money that we got to go out and spend and do. We bought tool kits for the house. We bought cleaning supplies. We bought toys. We bought Bibles, Bible storybooks, and got to present those to the family, and that was a real blessing. And so these are just a few pictures of them receiving their housewarming gifts. And I know we're running short on time, so Terry just kind of whipped through. When we're done, we hand off the keys. And I just wanted to, right here, this is where we started. This was day one when we're getting the forms ready. And the next picture, this is why we go. And Pastor Bill, you're asking me what one of my favorite things about the trip is and what keeps me coming back, and it's this picture right here. I got to say, halfway through this trip, I was like, this might be my last one. I am so dog tired out here. I don't know if it was the sun. I don't know if it's that I'm getting old. I don't know what it was, but it's like, I am so tired. Like I was sharing it, I got back to camp and I just wanted to go to bed. And I'm like, but putting these pictures together, putting this together to present to you guys, looking at the videos, and it's like, this is what keeps me coming back right here. And there's our team in front of the job well done. And just whip through after this. We drive back across the border that Thursday after the house is done. We get checked in at Newport Beach. We go to bed, get the sleep we need. Then we get up and we hit the beach. We were just at the beach 3 hours, but just enough to have a little fun. There's our juggler back in action. And just whip through. There's some football out on the beach, playing in the water. Reggie was so excited. I've never been in a warm ocean. Did you get in the water, Reg? No. A little bit bigger waves than we're used to and warmer than the Orinoco. Then we go to Abby's Pizza. This is the next day then, because after the beach, we drive to a hotel. Then we get up and we get to Roseburg. By lunchtime, we have some pizza. But what this trip is all about is back to that last slide. This is why we do it all. We do get to have a little fun on the way home and relax and enjoy each other's company, but this is really why we do it, and it's amazing. And I just want to give one more opportunity for leaders or students just to say anything you want about our trip.
Okay, so also one of the hardest parts, at least for me, was if you might have noticed there was black tar paper around the whole house. So I think it was the second day, me and a few other people had the awesome task of getting to cut 36 pieces of 11-foot-6-inch like long things. And that was really hard because it was really hot because the sun was reflecting the heat from the black paper. So it was radiating heat in the hot, hot sun. And we were doing that for a couple hours one day. So that was definitely, I had never done that job before. And I was like, wow, this is really tough. But it really kind of gets you like in the feel of Mexico because it's really hard. And that was just like a really cool experience.
Really quick, I just have to point out, as Raymond mentioned, we had less time on the job site than we've ever had before, and we also have fewer people than I've ever gone with, at least doing a double house. And what just blew my mind, this was my fourth trip, and even though we had a smaller crew and less time, I feel like this crew did the best job of any of the crews I've ever gotten with. They were just fantastic.
The one thing that we're all, and we worked through this every night back at camp, that we didn't get as much done as we wanted. But we're like, look, we're getting the job done. The house has one layer of stucco when we left. It probably has a second coat on it by now. But we typically will put a finishing coat on there and put a nice little texture to it because of the limited time we had. And we actually, our plan was to eat lunch and then put another coat on because it takes about three and a half hours to do that second coat. And they advised us against it. They just wanted to make sure that this got as dry as it needed to so the second coat wouldn't crack. So we kind of felt like, well, we didn't quite finish what we went down there to do, but the house, and Amor always emphasizes, the house is livable. They moved in the day that we left, and someone else will come in and make it look a little nicer. And I was sharing with the kids, it'd be kind of like you moving into a new house that hasn't been painted yet. Someone will come along and paint it, make it a little nicer, but it's livable and ready to go. So we did what we went down there to do, and it truly is an amazing experience. Thank you for letting us share.
Denita, I don't know how you're going to do it, but we will do our closing song. There's so much being said today about the emerging church, and it's got all kinds of definitions. Family and friends, this is the emerging church, okay? Mm. Give them a hand.
Stay safe.